Recorded live.
Hello, it's Saturday, March 20th, 2010, and this is Yahweh's Covenant People. William Fink standing in for Eli James, who took the evening off to attend a monthly meeting that he's been attending for the cause. And tonight I have Greg Howard here with me. Hello, Greg.
Hi, Bill.
And I think we plan to discuss Jeremiah chapter 31.
That's correct, yes.
I'd like to get right into that. I would like to read... I would like to start it in chapter 30, though, from verse 18.
Okay.
And basically, this is, you know, this discourse is to the deported children of Israel. Jeremiah is writing probably about, give or take 10 years. I mean, don't quote me on this. I didn't prepare for this program. He's probably writing about 610 B.C., And it's some years, maybe 600 B.C., and it's 20. It's some years before Jerusalem is actually destroyed, I believe. At least that's where the book of Jeremiah starts. It
right.
might be a little later in this, because we're in chapter 31. But it's before the final destruction by the Babylonians of the people in Jerusalem, and a lot of the book is talking about the many tribes of Israel that were already dispersed.
The Assyrian forcing of the tribes northward has already taken place, and there's another one getting ready to happen here.
Right. It's the Assyrians took away all the Israelites and all of Judah except the inhabitants of Jerusalem.
Right.
So actually most of Judah is already gone with Israel. Okay, I'm going to read from verse 18 in chapter 30.
Okay.
Thus saith Yahweh, behold, I will bring again the captivity of Jacob's tents. Now that's what the first thing I'd like to discuss, and why I chose to start here, is that word bring again. That word is the Hebrew word shub, and it means simply to return or to return to. And it could mean to turn back, but not necessarily. And there are other prophecies such as 2 Samuel 7:10, where Yahweh says that the children of Israel would not be in Palestine, where they would be moved to another land, and from that other land they would never move again.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's right.
Yeah, you know, if we expect them to return to Palestine, that there are many prophecies, such as the one in Jeremiah, there's a prophecy that Jerusalem would be destroyed and never made whole again. So
yeah.
Why would he bring people back to a land that was going to never be made whole again? And here it should probably read a lot better in context, I will return to the captivity of Jacob's tents, meaning that he will again turn his attention to the people of the dispersion.
Right.
And have mercy on his dwelling places. And the city shall be builded upon her own heap, and the palace shall remain after the manner thereof. And out of them shall proceed thanksgiving in the voice of them that make merry. And I will multiply them, and they shall not be few. I will also glorify them, and they shall not be small. Their children also shall be as aforetime. And their congregation shall be established before me. And I will punish all that oppress them. Now where it says that the city shall be builded upon her own heap, I believe that the city is the people. Like the city that descended it from heaven in the Revelation, that's the people of God. That's
mm-hmm.
That's a metaphor. That's what that means. It's an idiomatic use.
Yeah, not a literal.
Literally, right.
Brick building city, yeah.
And the Jews and the Catholics are very quick to say that this should all be taken literally, and it points to them, and that's all a huge lie. Because there are other scriptures concerning that.
Yeah, well, the Jews have completely taken over much of the Old Testament prophecies of the return of the Israelites and say, see, that's us. And, you know, 99% of Judeo-Christianity just nods their head and goes, yep, it sure is. You're the people of God. You know,
and actually, Malachi tells us that that's the Edomites returning to build up the high places.
Right.
And that they will be destroyed.
Well, Bill, you referenced something last night when I was listening to the archives that I totally agree with, that there's much illiteracy today. I don't remember if you said specifically among our people, but in general, but I would say there's a lot of illiteracy among our people, and you were good to point out that doesn't mean they cannot read. It means that they do not read.
Right. That's what illiteracy really is.
Yeah. And
the Jews have redefined illiteracy.
Well, not just redefined it, but they have so brainwashed us over the, and more so in this generation that we live in than maybe all the other generations combined, because of their ability now to put out mass information, and their control of information is worldwide. And our people literally are just like stupid cattle, walking around, nodding their head, just chanting the mantra, the Jews are the chosen people, and Israel is the return of the Jews, and they hear it enough from their pastor that, I mean, you try to convince them otherwise, and they just look at you like you're speaking another language to them. I marvel when I try to share truth from the scriptures with you know, whites that are not Christian identity, but, you know, seem to show a little openness, and I begin to share with them, and I mean, it's just walls are built up in their minds, and yet they themselves are not students of the Word. Even if a lot of them go to church, they carry a Bible, go to Bible studies, but they're not students of the Word. Even if they study a little bit, they don't dig in. They don't really take a look. You know, they just hear ideas and adopt them because they've been told that enough times. So,
and
you're right.
Even the ones that do don't look at any other, they don't compare any other contemporary literature. When I say contemporary, I mean contemporary to biblical times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like they get a set of doctrines from their church, their pastor, and that's what they believe. And, you know, there's enough shallow interpretive verses that can be made to point to just about any doctrine to back it up. You know, they can maybe turn to two or three verses and go, see, here it is, and that's as deep as it gets for most of them. You know, and I got to say, that's why I really appreciate the scholarship that we have in Israel Identity, because it's deep scholarship. It has to be for us to have a foundation for these beliefs, because these beliefs are so different in some areas than what the mass of Christianity believes. We better be secure in our knowledge of it, in our ability to go to the scriptures and really prove our cause, and we do. And I've you know, spent a lot of time in study, verifying what's been said to me and what I've read, and it's clear to me. It really is. You know, we are Israel, not these masquerading Jews calling themselves Judeans, the false Judeans. Our race is the true Israel of the world, the true race of Israel, the 12 tribes. That is a great, great truth, and I think every one of us should be able to go to the Word and satisfy himself or herself by being able to go and prove that to people. Whether other people believe it or not, you know, that's up to them.
Well, you know, basically the church or Catholics or Episcopalians or Black Reformed theologians, they'll claim that they're Israel. And they'll claim that they're Israel because they believe. But we believe because we're Israel. And
yeah.
And that's what the Word says. My sheep hear my voice.
Right.
And, and if you do not believe me, you are not my sheep. And basically the Jews weren't his sheep, and that's why they didn't believe him. They weren't his sheep because they didn't believe him.
Yeah.
And the church, they reverse all of the language of Scripture.
Well, no, they do, and absolutely the Judeo-Christianity followers have spiritualized so much, especially of the New Testament. And, you know, to them, anyone that prays a prayer of faith in Jesus becomes a spiritual Israelite. And there is just no foundation for that belief, none. But they
not whatsoever, because the promise is to the seed, and there's no such thing as spiritual sperm, and that's the Greek word, sperm.
And I think this gets to the foundation of what we're going to get into in chapter 31 of sowing the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and with the seed of beast. And the racial confusion that is upon us today in this generation is, I don't think it's ever been greater in the history of man, the confusion of race that is here today that we have. And again, you can blame the Jews because there's no teaching on race in the church, in schools, nothing. If anything, it's completely played down. I mean, if you saw in the news, you see the uproar because somebody got on a microphone at a Walmart and said, attention Walmart shoppers, all black people must leave the store. And I got a chuckle out of that because it caused such a massive uproar that someone actually called out a race. You know, and I guess they caught the kid and they're going to crucify him and it's a hate crime and, you know, this is the atmosphere that we live in now concerning race. And race is not taught, race is de-emphasized, and it makes perfect sense if you think about it, because the Bible is a book about race, about one race, about our race, and the more race is taught, the more our race wakes up and sees, hey, there is something to this race thing. Yahweh did have a called out race. You know, the 12 tribes of Israel were clearly of one single race. They wouldn't have been of all these different races, you know. So I greatly enjoy talking about race. I never get tired of talking about it because I think it's one of the most important things that we can discuss, especially our race. So
absolutely. And let's read Jeremiah 31, and when we get to that point, I'd love to discuss it.
Okay.
I mean, if that's all right with you. I mean,
absolutely. But I'm burdened that, you know, of course, I think no one has a better understanding of race than someone in Christian Identity, because, you know, they understand that Yahweh's elect is a racial elect. It's not just faith in Yahweh, but it's being of the proper race and having faith in Yahweh.
Well, you have to be one of the children first, and then
absolutely.
You have to have faith.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, apart from being born in the proper family, your faith is probably in vain.
If you're not one of the children, why should you why should you ever even be considered for the faith? The faith was too certain of Abraham's seed.
Yeah, and no one else. You know, and without a doubt, one of the greatest heresies I think that is taught in the so-called Judeo-Christian Church is a universalism belief that anybody on this planet can come to Yahshua Christ by a simple prayer of faith, regardless of race, even if they're, you know, they're particularly racial hybrids, which, you know, these churches are filled with these things now.
Well, Paul said you're either a son or a bastard.
Yeah.
And a bastard in Greek is a nathos. And nathos is an antonym of Gnasius. And Gnasius means authentically of the race. And nathos means spurious. And a spurious person is someone who's not of the race.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
I could read the definitions right from Liddell and Scott. They won't disagree. That they'll support everything I just said.
You don't get an argument from me. I mean, it's one of the great truths, but it's probably the most offensive truth to others.
If it was good to be a bastard, why did Paul contrast them to sons? And obviously, if you're a bastard, you can't be a son, or Paul wouldn't have made he would not have juxtaposed those words.
Yeah. So racial purity is profoundly important, always has been, and in today's age, it's absolutely critical. And yet we are taught that from every angle, we are barraged with a multicultural message that it's perfectly fine for one race to date another race, to marry another race, to have a child with another race. You know, what's it matter? One big happy human family. You know, that message is nonstop, TV, radio, Hollywood, movies, anywhere you look where there's a flow of information from a Jew. That message is nonstop. It just doesn't end. And it really gets on my nerves, to say the least, you know. Because even if a handful of us see the truth, the majority of us do not, and it can't help but ruin the youth of our race. Jews are going to pay a great price for that someday, no doubt about it. So why don't I start reading a little bit here in chapter 31? Are we ready to jump in?
Well, read. I think it's important that you read up from I left off at 30:19, and I think that sets the stage.
Okay.
For 31.
All right, let me jump back to that. you left off starting with 19, right? Okay.
I finished 19. Okay. Well, you could start 19. It doesn't matter.
All right. I'll start with verse 20. Their children also shall be as aforetime.
He's talking about Jacob's tents, and he's talking about their children shall be as aforetime.
Mm-hmm.
So children, the idea of children is very important here.
Definitely.
Nobody from any other race can step in and claim to be one of those children.
Yeah.
All right, I'm sorry, go on. But I just wanted to make that point. It was important.
Okay. Their children also shall be as aforetime, and their congregation shall be established before me, and I will punish all them or all that oppress them. And their nobles shall be of themselves, and their governor shall proceed from the midst of them. And I will cause him to draw near, and he shall approach unto me. For who is this that engaged his heart to approach unto me, saith Yahweh? And ye shall be my people, and I will be your Elohim. Behold, the whirlwind of Yahweh goeth forth with a fury, a continuing whirlwind. It shall fall with pain upon the head of the wicked. The fierce anger of Yahweh shall not return until he hath done it, until he have performed the intents of his hearts. In the latter days he shall consider it. Let's jump to 31.
Well, let me just say that, he's talking about his people and their children. And
right.
He's talking about Jacob. So you can't imagine that anybody else's children should ever be put into the context here. They're just not in the scope. And that's a racial statement. This is a racial statement.
Well, these chapters and these verses, it's a book about race. And
well, right. I'm just trying to stress that point.
Yeah. It absolutely,
because we're going to see it in 31 even more strongly.
Yeah. And it absolutely is about race. And the continuation of a race, as you mentioned, via children and a seed line, and a seed line is just a man and a woman having a child, and that race continues, and that seed line remains pure. All right, chapter 31. At the same time, saith Yahweh, I will be the Elohim of all the families of Israel, and they shall be my people. Thus saith Yahweh, the people which were left of the sword found grace in the wilderness, even Israel, when I went to cause him to rest. Yahweh hath appeared of old unto me, saying, yea, I have loved thee with an everlasting love. Therefore, with loving kindness have I drawn thee. Again I will build thee, and thou shalt be built, O virgin of Israel. Thou shalt again be adorned with thy tabrets, shalt go forth in the dances of them that make merry. They shall yet plant vines upon the mountains of Samaria. The planters shall plant and shall eat them as common things. For there shall be a day that the watchman upon Mount Ephraim shall cry, arise ye, and let us go to Zion unto Yahweh our Elohim. For thus saith Yahweh, sing with gladness for Jacob, and shout among the chief of the nations. Publish ye, praise ye, and say, O Yahweh, save thy people, the remnant of Israel. Behold, I will bring them from the north country, and gather them from the coasts of the earth, and with them the blind and the lame, the woman with child, and her that travaileth with child together. A great company shall return thither. They shall come with weeping, and with supplications will I lead them. I will cause them to walk by the rivers of waters in a straight way, wherein they shall not stumble. For I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. Hear the word of Yahweh, O ye nations, and declare it in the isles afar off, and say, he that scattered Israel will gather him and keep him as a shepherd doth his flock. For Yahweh hath redeemed Jacob and ransomed him from the hand of him that was stronger than he.
I don't see anything about a church in there.
It's funny you say that, Bill, because my background, most people know, I'll just give a quickie on it. I came out of Judeo-Christianity, had a degree in Bible, and was a minister in the Baptist denomination for a while. And I'm telling you, Israel is completely de-emphasized in the Christianity world. It's all the church. Jesus died for the church. The great wedding feast is for the church in the book of Revelation, and Paul's main doctrine was the church, church, church. And it's like Israel had their chance, they rejected, and now it's the church, and it's been transferred over.
Well, the great wedding feast in the book of Revelation, the angel says to John, come, I will show you the bride. And the bride is a city descended from heaven. And that's not a church. And on the gates of the city are the names of the 12 tribes and children of Israel. And if you're not from one of those tribes, I got news for you. You're not getting into that city.
That's how I see it as well. You know, and I mean, I don't know how you get around the fact of the 12 gates and on each gate a name of one of the tribes. I mean, that cannot be any other thing than the total exclusivity for Israel and Israel alone. What possible other reason could that be for? And by the way, an angel guarding each gate. So good luck getting in if you're not an Israelite. It's not going to happen for you. But these promises, and we're going to see some verses here coming up, that these promises are eternal. They were not some kind of a dispensational thing for Israel and Israel's time has come and gone. But as long as the sun, the moon, and the stars are still out there, these promises for Israel will last. And, I mean, you're right, Bill. I think the whole concept of church is an absolutely mistaken Judeo-Christian concept. Basically a mistranslation of a Greek word, ekklesia, which the term church that was chosen for that, entire doctrines have been built around a translated word that really did not have the meaning that we associate with the word church. And yet you look at the doctrine that has sprung up in Christianity around the church, basically is a massive substitute for true Israel. You know, there had to be some nefarious background in that. There had to be. What do you think on that?
Well, I don't really know if it was nefarious or not. I mean, the early Christians were all more or less universalists. The
mm-hmm.
early Christian writers were all universalists. They all bought the idea of universalism. And that's, yeah, you know, you can't forget that Yahshua Christ prophesied universalism in the parable of the net. He prophesied universalism, and it's part of our lesson. Yeah, you know, it was our ancestors long before the culmination of the New Covenant, or even the promise of the New Covenant, who were trying to bring other races into their communion. Now, namely, the Canaanites.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you bring up this point, because when we get into probably the main couple, two, three verses coming up here, to me, these verses just absolutely paint a picture of universalism, and that Yahweh is causing this to happen, which is very interesting because there's a massively big foundation of racial purity laid in the Old Testament. You know, between seed being sown in a pure way, cattle not allowed to gender with other animals. Even the garments that the Israelites were wearing were supposed to be of a, you know, no mixing of linen and woolen. So, I mean, it, you know, and on and on and on. But yet, you know, it seems like in these end times, universalism just has to be. And we look around us and we're surrounded by universalism everywhere you look. And yet out of that, Yahweh's calling a remnant, us. It's very profound, and I'm not sure that I can adequately put it into words, but, you know, we're going to attempt to discuss it here, but this is a major thing going on that we're witnessing in this age that we live in right now.
Well, we're seeing the exact fulfillment of this prophecy.
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad to hear you say it, because that's how I see it as well.
Well, you know? I wrote about it a couple of years ago. I wrote a paper called The Immigration Problem and Biblical Prophecy. And,
mm-hmm.
and the whole paper is centered around these verses in Jeremiah 31 that you're discussing.
Okay. I've probably read it. I've read most of the stuff on your website. I retain everything I read for a short time, and then it seems to fly away, and I need to read it over again.
Yeah, well, I probably do too, but that's okay.
You know, that's the beauty of identity, Christian identity, in that our truths are so provable not just historically, but biblically, and archaeology lines up. And, I mean, it's a beautiful thing to see what we see and to hear the voice of Yahweh, and to be one of the sheep. You know, I mean, life is hard for us sometimes, but I would have it no other way. So I give praise to Yahweh for opening my eyes to who I really am in this world and what my racial background is. It's the most important thing there is. You know, what is more important than being born into the racial line of the 12 tribes? Can you name anything more important in this world than that?
Well, if you're not born into those people, you shouldn't get, you know, if you're not an Adamite, you didn't partake in a fall, you have no expectation in a restoration. I mean, it's important to us because we know the message. And because we believe that we are the descendants of those tribes. And with good cause. However,
right.
if you don't experience something, you can't lament its loss.
Yeah, you know, because you were never under the law to begin with. You know, most of these people walking around, these other races, you know, the ones that profess Jesus, the ones that do not. I mean, the law, they were never under the law. The law was strictly for Israel and no one else. And Yahshua came to redeem those that were under the law. So, I don't know, the argument for universalism to me is so weak that it does not withstand any scrutiny at all. The only problem is when you talk with the universalist, they become all emotional. You know, you begin to peel the layers off of their argument even a little bit, and they go crazy. It's tough to talk with people about this because it's such a big deal to them that anybody can be saved, and that salvation is not exclusive to any group. So, I don't know. But we're going to see in these verses coming up that was prophesied by Yahweh. Let me read on a little bit. Let's see, I left off, I think I read to verse 11. I left off, ransomed him from the hand of him that was stronger than he.
And he has redeemed Jacob. He's not redeemed anybody else. There's no redemption in the Bible for anybody but the children of Israel. Okay, go on.
I mean, verse 11 is such a clear verse. I'm glad you pointed that out. For Yahweh hath redeemed Jacob.
Right. I challenge anybody to show me any redemption to anybody except the children of Israel in the Old Testament. It doesn't exist. It doesn't even exist in the New Testament.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you know, the exclusivity of Israel in the New Testament is an excellent study. You know, there's plenty of verses that point out that salvation is for Israel. I mean, I, you know, it's not a hard thing to prove to someone who has an open mind, you know. I mean, if someone just wants to hang their hat on John 3:16 in the King James Version, well, then, you know, maybe you're not going to convince that misguided person. But, I mean, the truth is there. From Matthew to Revelation, it's there. And you can go to just about every book in there and point it out. All right, let me read on, starting at verse 12. Therefore they shall come and sing in the height of Zion, and shall flow together to the goodness of Yahweh, for wheat and for wine, for oil, and for the young of the flock and of the herd. And their soul shall be as a watered garden, and they shall not sorrow any more at all. Then shall the virgin rejoice in the dance, both young men and old together, for I will turn their mourning into joy, and will comfort them, and make them rejoice from their sorrow. And I will satiate the soul of the priest with fatness, and my people shall be satisfied with my goodness, saith Yahweh. Thus saith Yahweh, a voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation and bitter weeping, Rachel weeping for her children, refused to be comforted for her children because they were not. Thus saith Yahweh, refrain thy voice from weeping, and thine eyes from tears, for thy work shall be rewarded, saith Yahweh. And they shall come away, or they shall come again from the land of the enemy. And there is hope in thine end, saith Yahweh, that thy children shall come again to their own border. I have surely heard Ephraim bemoaning himself thus, thou hast chastised me, and I was chastised, as a bullock unaccustomed to the yoke. Turn thou me, and I shall be turned, for thou art Yahweh, my Elohim. Surely after that I was turned, I repented, and after that I was instructed. I smote upon my thigh, I was ashamed, yea, even confounded, because I did bear the reproach of my youth. Is Ephraim my dear son? Is he a pleasant child? For since I spake against him, I do earnestly remember him still. Therefore my bowels are troubled for him. I will surely have mercy upon him, saith Yahweh. Set thee up waymarks, make thee high heaps. Set thine heart toward the highway, even the way which thou wentest, turn again, O virgin of Israel. Turn again to these thy cities. How long wilt thou go about, O thou backsliding daughter? For Yahweh hath created a new thing in the earth. A woman shall compass a man. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, the Elohim of Israel, as yet they shall use this speech in the land of Judah and in the cities thereof, when I shall bring again their captivity. Yahweh bless thee, O habitation of justice and mountain of holiness. And there shall dwell in Judah itself and in all the cities thereof together husbandmen, and they that go forth with flocks. For I have satiated the weary soul, and I have replenished every sorrowful soul. Upon this I awakened and beheld, and my sleep was sweet unto me. Behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and with the seed of beast. And it shall come to pass that like as I have watched over them, to pluck up and to break down and to throw down and to destroy and to afflict, so will I watch over them to build and to plant, saith Yahweh. In those days they shall say no more, the fathers have eaten a sour grape, and the children's teeth are set on edge. But everyone shall die for his own iniquity. Every man that eateth the sour grape, his teeth shall be set on edge. Let's stop there and kind of chew on this a little bit.
Well, to understand the sour grape, I would have to go to Deuteronomy 32:32. Mm-hmm. For their vine is the vine of Sodom, and the fields of Gomorrah. Their grapes are grapes of gall. Their clusters are bitter. And what were they doing in Sodom and Gomorrah? Race mixing, homosexuality?
Yeah.
And that's why Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed.
Well, go ahead, Bill. Finish.
And those things are prevalent in society today. And every white nation is being overrun with aliens today. Every single white nation. No, nobody's flooding into China. Other races aren't flooding into India and China and Kenya. So if you want to find Israel in the world, you have to find the fulfillment of prophecy. And I don't see how every single white nation could be overrun with aliens in these days if it's not the fulfillment of this very prophecy.
No, you're exactly right. And every white nation in the world today is under racial attack. And the United States is certainly the perfect example. You know, other white countries have been all but destroyed, and the racial harmony destroyed. And of course, we know who is the architect behind all of this racial flooding in. It's the Jews, of course.
Well, it's Satan, of course.
You know, yeah, Satan through his children, the Jew.
But Yahweh is allowing the Jews to test us, just as he allowed Satan to test Job.
Well, it's interesting here. He says, behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and with the seed of beast. You know,
absolutely, but Satan is the vehicle that he's using to do that.
Precisely. You know, because obviously Yahweh is not a promoter of race mixing. He's commanded against it, yet he's allowing it to happen. And we are seeing it at an unprecedented rate right now in the world, at every white country. And, you know, I keep up on certain websites that have news of, you know, different white nations over in Scandinavia, over in South Africa, you know, not just the United States, but I'd like to see what goes on in other white nations. And they are just being, you know, their societies are being destroyed by insane immigration laws that are being passed that make no sense whatsoever unless your goal is to destroy the white race in that nation. Then
right,
it makes perfect
and roving
sense.
Gangs of Muslims are roaming the streets of Stockholm, raping white women right now.
Exactly. And South Africa and, you know, the former Rhodesia, you know, those were white nations founded by whites, run by whites, and yet, you know, Negroes have literally just been allowed to murder and rape and take over those countries and to destroy them. And every country where the white man has founded a nation and really built something up, something that benefited the other races that were in that country. They lived a better life than they ever would have lived otherwise. Yet Jews are in there, and they have the cursed ability to rise to the top in legislative positions and in judgeships. And
well, they have that ability because of our sin.
Yeah, it's allowed to them to happen. But for their part, they gravitate to those positions. And once they get a foothold in there, they open the door to their fellow Jews like, you know, no tomorrow, and they just take over and pass laws that are absolutely detrimental to us in every white nation, and we're absolutely seeing this here, and who knows what's tucked away in this massive, you know, healthcare bill that they're apparently going to vote on tomorrow. I mean, even the people going to vote on it haven't read the darn thing. Who knows what's tucked in there?
I would think it's been a long time since any congressman's read any bill.
Yeah. Basically, they just are told, all right, you're going to vote for this bill or you're going to vote against this bill. But they don't really, you know, who among them is going to read 1,200, 1,300, 1,400 pages of fine print? It's not going to happen.
No, cocktail hour is much more important.
Yeah. So who knows what has been tucked in there to break down our race even further, you know? And, I mean, we could spend many programs talking about how the destruction of our race is going on at an unprecedented rate right now. It's really mind-blowing, especially to us that see the truth of race. You know, you go up to the average, you know, Judeo-Christian churchianity member and ask them, you know, do you really see what's going on around you and how our race is being destroyed? They wouldn't know what to say. You know, they don't understand that they've been targeted for destruction, essentially. You know, I mean, if you don't understand Genesis 3:15, you don't know what's going on in the world today. It just seems kind of crazy around you, but you can't break it down. You know, if you don't really see the enmity of the seed of Satan through the Jews directed against our race, you don't know what's going on. You know, you don't like what's going on, but you can't really understand that you are in a battle and somebody's going to be destroyed in this thing, you know. So I appreciate being in the remnant and looking in the chat room and seeing a bunch of people in the remnant tonight. I don't know how many of these guests are in the remnant. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that most of them are. I'm always thinking that some of these guests, though, are observers from Jewish organizations taking notes against us. I don't know. That's just a paranoid guy in me, but.
Well, I don't care because I'll tell them what I think.
I'm not holding back either.
I mean, that, you know, that's it's just an objective observation of what's going on in the world today.
Yeah.
From a Christian perspective. And the Jew could go to hell. I mean, I don't care about the Jew. Our people are absolutely insane for giving the Jew any credence at all, for making the Jew any sort of commentator on morality. How do you give the people that killed God to be able to commentate on morality?
Don't ask me. I can't answer that.
How do you consider immoral people when their chief religious figures suck the penises of baby boys and give them herpes?
That's a good point.
How are they any sort of moral authority or religious authority?
I would say they have neither. You know,
they have absolute. Where are the boundaries? They have absolutely no moral authority. They're Satan. They're devils, period. And any Christian that heeds them, it is basically a whore for the devil.
Well, Bill, you'd have to say we're absolutely in the age of the house of Israel and the house of Judah being sown with the seed of man and the seed of beast.
Well, there's no doubt. And you know, for I'm going to read, this is my pet verse lately, because this is what's going on today, right now. For Yahweh is put into their hearts to fulfill his will. It's his will to test us in his manner. And
it
to agree and to give their kingdom unto the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. And
well,
the woman which thou sawest, the whore, is the great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. And basically, we are the whore, collectively, but it's the system, but it's the system that we all support or have supported at one time in our lives.
Yeah.
And until our brethren come out of it, it's going to keep beating us down.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting how, I mean, we see that the house of Israel and the house of Judah is being sown with the seed of man. That's the Hebrew word Adam, you know, signifying us, those that blush and that show the blood in the face, with the seed of beast. And then verse 28 is such a great verse. It says, and it shall come to pass that like as I have watched over them to pluck up and to break down and to throw down and to destroy and to afflict, so will I watch over them to build and to plant, saith Yahweh. So even though we're going to be sown with the seed of beast, and Yahweh is going to be doing the sowing, or at least allowing it, his plan here is to watch over us, to build and to plant, all positive things. And to me, when I see Christian identity as it stands right now in the year that we're in and the moment that we are living in, Yahweh is building and planting. And yet we are seeing all around us the seed of beasts, and we hate it. You know, we hate this situation with the racial disharmony and the races around us and our people with other races. We know in our spirit that is a very satanic thing.
Right,
but
the Christian hope is that there will be a remnant and it will be for our good in the long run. We will come out of this. We will prevail. We do have hope in our trials. That's the
absolutely. Reason. And yeah, that's what it's saying here. I will watch over them to build and to plant. So apparently this must have to happen, even as, you know, we wish it wasn't happening. And I go absolutely insane when I'm a few times I watch TV, I see a racial hybrid as my president. I go absolutely cuckoo when I see that. I can listen to him for about 3 seconds, and then the TV goes off. That's about my limit. That's about 2 or 3 words, and then I'm done. I can't take anymore.
Well,
I'm sorry.
That's about 3 seconds more patience than I got, because I wouldn't turn the television on.
Well, you're stronger than I am, but I'm good for about 3 seconds. Basically, as soon as I see him, off it goes. This is our judgment. This is part of our being sown with the seed of beast. It has to be. Our leader is the seed of beast. He himself has admitted it. You know, he's admitted to that he's a mutt. I'm using his word that he used. Basically, he said that he's the seed of beast. You know, and our house is being sown like this. You know, and again, he's not sowing any other word. He's not sowing anyone else but the house of Israel and the house of Judah. You know, and to me, that's just another way of saying the white nations of the world, the house of Israel and the house of Judah.
Since this prophecy has never come true of any other nations, I would say that it has to be.
Yeah. And, you know, vocabulary is even we in identity get our vocabulary messed up. Sometimes I still, when I say the term Israel, somehow in my mind I think, that little country over in Palestine filled with Jews. Sometimes my mind just goes that way, you know, because for so many years, to me, that was Israel. But now,
what logic is there that the planet's most intelligent, most advanced race would self-destruct by allowing all of the backwards third world nations to flood it with different cultures, different ideas, ideas adverse to the very existence of those host nations, such as Sharia law and things like that.
Bill, that's a great...
What logic does that make if this was not the fulfillment of these scriptures?
That's an excellent point, because there is no logic whatsoever. In fact, even heathen countries, Japan, China, Korea, they would never allow this foolishness. Even the Jews, with all their wickedness, they know better than to allow their country to be flooded with other races, yet they are, you know, leading the way to flood our nation with other races, and yet we allow it. And, you know, I always have found it interesting that if you look at these multicultural parades and celebrate diversity, and most of the time these parades are filled with white people. The whites will be the first ones to line up to fight for these other races. I mean, that's how turned around the Jew can get us, where we will lead the way to our own destruction, you know, chanting slogans of celebrate diversity while our country is being flooded with other races. You know, exactly in fulfillment of the verses in Revelation, I think it's chapter 13, that talks about in the end times the flood will pour forth out of the mouth of the dragon. And then I believe it's chapter 17, where that flood is identified as peoples and nations and tongues, other races. So on the one hand, it seems like these other races flow out of the mouth of Satan, out of the mouth of the dragon. And yet here we see that it's Yahweh sowing us with the seed of man and with the seed of beast.
Well, I believe that's a few different prophecies, but that's okay. The races, you know, that flowed from the mouth of the serpent, Genesis chapter 12, that they chased the woman into the wilderness, right, where she was protected from the serpent.
Yes.
And I believe that's the invasions of the Arabs and the Mongols. That occurred in the Middle Ages, by which the Jews actually sought to destroy Europe then.
Yeah.
You know, it's the Jews that let the Mongols into the cities of Eastern Europe.
Certainly.
And it's the Jews that brought the Moors into the Gothic kingdom of Spain. The Jews did that. There's much documentary evidence. And there's a real good book. It's written from a Catholic perspective. But there's a real good book that documents the Jewish hand in the Moorish invasion of Spain, and it's called The Plot Against the Church, and it's by a guy named Maurice Pinay, P-I-N-A-Y. And it's a real good book that documents the Jewish hand behind the Moorish invasion of Spain. There is no doubt.
Yeah. It is, you know, history just documents many, many times the Jews using the other races as a weapon against our race. And it's such an effective weapon because the Jew actually thrives in these multicultural environments because it's easier for them to hide out. You know, their biggest fear is a truly strong white nation, you know, unified as a race. When that happens, they get cast out of the country. As history documents, at least 100 times there's been Jewish expulsions, I believe. I want to say 112. I don't know if you know that number.
Yes, it's many, many, many times. And I presented evidence on the Sunday night Mein Kampf Project program with Sword Brethren that all of the Eastern European countries were actually waking up to the Jews before World War II. And there was a lot of agitation against the Jews in Eastern Europe before World War II. And I believe that those countries were handed over to the Soviets after World War II as a punishment for their resisting the Jews.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you.
You know, as a punishment by the Jews of the West. Yeah, you know, the bankers and the Roosevelt cabinet knew what they were doing when they gave Eastern Europe into the hands of the Soviets.
I mean, right now, our country, the United States, is so taken over by Jews. Can you imagine the vocal uproar if there begin to be a call for the expulsion of Jews from the United States?
When Yahweh comes back and he destroys the tares. Our people are going to protest against God. How do you kill
God? I don't
God's
doubt
people?
It. I, God, what are you doing? How dare you?
Our people are going to be mad at God for killing what they perceive to be his people, or for removing them. Because all the tares, when Yahweh returns, are going into the lake of fire. And he is going to return. There is no doubt.
Praise Yahweh. May that day be soon. But I mean, there will be one, at least one more massive expulsion. Only that expulsion won't be to just send them to another country. That may be the last expulsion of all time when the tares are removed from our midst. That certainly will be the last one. I don't know. I'd bet against them not having another one until then. Because this nation, of course, it can, you know, Yahweh can turn something around in a day. I'm not saying that couldn't happen, but this nation right now is conquered for the most part by Jews.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Our race
Judeo-Christianity is Talmudism for the masses.
Yeah, that's well said, Bill. I mean, apart from the remnant who understands these things and that sees the Jews for the true seed of the serpent, of who they are, you know, the rest of our race basically celebrates them as the chosen of Yahweh. There's no expulsion in the works. It could never happen in the current climate situation, even though it would be the greatest thing that could ever happen to this country. But it's not going to happen, you know. But that's okay. We are where we need to be. We are seeing that the house of Israel and the house of Judah is being sown with the seed of beast. And, you know, I looked that up in the Farrar Fenton translation. He translated seed of beast as seed of cattle, which, you know, that was obviously a word that didn't convey the meaning of this verse, especially with the context.
Well, no, it's the word is behemoth, and
right.
It's used very often as an, you know, as a metaphor, and it's used for the other races.
Yes, and I think the context is absolutely established with these following verses talking about essentially, you know, the metaphor of the father's eating a sour grape, the children's teeth are set on edge, and then dying for your own iniquity. And every man that eats the sour grapes, his teeth shall be set on edge.
Well, right. And going back to the vine of Sodom and the bitter grapes, I believe that this describes race mixing. And what it's saying is that all through history, the fathers race mixed and the children suffered for it, of course, because they're mansers.
Yeah.
And the time is coming when the fathers who race mix, they themselves are going to be punished for it.
That's what it says.
That their own teeth. Every man shall die for his own iniquity. Every man that eats the sour grape.
Yeah, definitely. And the sour, you know, eating the sour grape is a perfect metaphor for race mixing.
So we're coming to the point where even though all through history, and it's the natural result of race mixing, is the suffering of the offspring of those unions, we're coming to the point where, behold, the days come, says Yahweh, you know, but everyone shall die for his own iniquity. Every man that eats the sour grape.
You know, essentially, the whole thought of what I wanted to get into tonight, we're really into it right now, and that is race mixing, how it's used as a weapon against our people, and how our nations are being destroyed through race mixing. Not just whites with other races, but just flooding our nation with other races. I mean, you go to any area in any city where any race other than us lives, it's a disaster, especially the blacks. I mean, you give the blacks the nicest neighborhood in any city and come back in 2-3 years, and you just might as well bring a bulldozer with you and just flatten the place.
Oh, believe me, I know. I grew up in Jersey City, and I saw that city go down the tubes. And
yeah,
I saw Newark.
They'll destroy it.
Newark was a beautiful city, and it went down the tubes. Atlantic City, New Jersey, was it? I remember being 5 and 6 years old, and once a year on Mother's Day, my father took my mother and packed the kids in the car and went to Atlantic City, and we walked on a boardwalk, and it was beautiful. And in the late 60s, Negroes poured into Atlantic City.
Yeah.
And by 1970, it was a giant slum. It was one giant slum. This beautiful Victorian, it was a Gilded Age city, meaning most of the buildings were from the late 1800s.
Yeah.
And they were beautiful buildings, beautiful Victorian type mansions and Gothic architecture. It was just a beautiful city. And it was destroyed by 1974. It was absolutely destroyed, every bit of it. And they built casinos in it to bail it out. And the casinos are these multi-billion-dollar megaliths in the middle of a slum. And people take the bus into the casino. The bus drives right under the building into the lot. And the people never get out into the community. And they, if they did, they would never come back.
Oh, they'd get killed.
Right.
I'm sure they have security all over the place. You know?
Right. Well, I've seen these cities on the East Coast. I've seen them in my lifetime. I've experienced them destroyed. And I watched them get destroyed when I was a child. And Jersey City was a beautiful city. When I was 5 years old, my mother put me on a bus to go to kindergarten. She didn't take me on the bus. She put me on the bus. And I got off the bus at the school. Today, you wouldn't let your 15-year-old kid up and down that road.
That's right.
That street. It's crazy.
You'd never put your kindergartner on any bus.
I was in kindergarten. My mother walked me to the bus stop. I got on a bus. I went to school. I got on a bus after school. I took it, and either my mother worked, so either my father, if he got off work early, or my grandmother would be there waiting for me.
I remember when I was a little kid, my parents would put me on a train from a big town in the Midwest for a four-hour train ride to go visit my grandparents. And, nothing ever went wrong.
Well, by the time I was 13, that avenue, Bergen Avenue in Jersey City, that was so beautiful and it was full of all these shops and it was vibrant and it was always busy, it was a slum. It was a ghetto. By the time the Negroes took it over, and it became a ghetto instantly. And I saw it happen to Philadelphia. All the East Coast cities, they were all taken up. Boston, I can't even think of the name of the town. It's in Mass. I can't even think of the name of it right now. But, I'm sorry, Fall River, Mass.
Yeah.
The Portuguese took it over, and it basically became a slum. It's Puerto Ricans, Woonsocket, Rhode Island. Puerto Ricans took over Woonsocket, Rhode Island. It was right. I spent a lot of time in Bellingham, Mass. When I was a little kid, it was very rural. And Woonsocket was the biggest city, and it was about 30 minutes from my aunt's house in Bellingham, Mass. And it was a nice, it was an old factory town, but it was a nice city when I was a little kid. And when I grew up to be an adult, I went up there and I couldn't believe it. It was one big Puerto Rican slum.
Yeah. Bill, this whole matter of race mixing is such a foundational thing that we have to understand and teach to people. I've been doing a lot of study over the last few months in the book of Enoch, and Enoch really lays a foundation for what brought the world into sin and the whole thing that went on in the garden with the serpent and Eve and the watchers and the race mixing with human women. And I just wanted to read a couple of verses here out of Enoch chapter 12. It says, starting in verse 3, "And I, Enoch, was blessing the Lord of majesty and the King of the ages, and lo, the watchers called me. Enoch the scribe and said to me, Enoch, thou scribe of righteousness, go declare to the watchers of the heaven who have left the high heaven, the holy eternal place, and have defiled themselves with women, and have done as the children of earth do, and have taken unto themselves wives. You have wrought great destruction on earth, and you shall have no peace nor forgiveness of sin. And inasmuch as they delight themselves in their children, the murder of their beloved ones shall they see, and over the destruction of their children shall they lament and make supplication unto eternity, but mercy and peace shall you not attain." And, Enoch is so clear. I love Enoch. But he gets into the fact that these watchers race mixed and came down and had children with women. And these verses to me are very parallel to these verses in Jeremiah, because children are involved and the watchers' children were going to be destroyed. and they were going to make supplication unto eternity, and yet they were not going to receive forgiveness.
And that's why I believe that the angels that left their first estate, the angels that sinned, they created the other races. Yahweh didn't create the other races. The other races are not in the Genesis 1 creation.
I tell you, sometimes your interpretation of that makes perfect sense.
Well, let's put it this way. I mean, Yahshua Christ stood there and said, stood in Jerusalem and said that every plant that my heavenly Father did not plant shall be rooted up. And that means that there have to be plants that Yahweh did not plant. So to look at plants for plants that Yahweh did not plant, let's compare the biological species on earth with the record of creation.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see four-legged beasts and quadrupeds and serpents and birds of heaven created, and you'll see Adamic man created. Okay, where's the Chinese guy?
Yeah, I know. I mean, you either have to see it the way you're saying, or you have to believe that they're, what is it, Genesis 1:25, that they're the beasts of the field. I think that was created on the fifth day.
Well, Clifton's showing, Clifton's writing a couple of series of papers on it right now that's quite detailed, but he's showing that can't include the other races. Because wherever the other races are used metaphorically in Scripture, the word is behemoth. But the beast that in Genesis 1:24, 1:25 is Che.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not used metaphorically of the other races in Scripture. Only the word behemoth is used metaphorically of the other races in Scripture, where it says that a woman shall not lie with a beast. And it's talking about a two-legged beast. It can't be talking about a four-legged beast, because four-legged beasts, as Clifton points out, they don't lay down when they have sex. They stand up.
Interesting. I've heard that before, but I hadn't considered it for a while. But, yeah, you're right. They stand up, you know.
Basically, it cannot be proven that the other races are in the Genesis 1:24, 1:25 beast. And,
yes.
And Eli asserts that they are, but I would assert that they're not. I would assert that it's the – and it's in my paper, The Problem with Genesis 6, 1-4. And in the Book of Enoch, it states that the fallen angels went out and mixed their seed with every kind.
Right.
They created the other races. That, I mean, if Yahshua divides the world into two groups, okay, sheep and goats, the sheep are the white Israelite nations, the white Adamic nations. Who are the goats? Everybody else. Where's the other races? There is no third alternative. You're either a sheep or a goat.
You make a strong argument for it.
So if he'd have created any of those goats, why would he destroy them? You're either a sheep and you're going on the right side and you're going into everlasting righteousness, or you're a goat and you're done. You're going into the lake of fire.
Not exactly a universalistic belief, I would say.
No, it's not a universalistic belief.
Yeah.
But it does not. An examination of Yahshua's statements in the New Testament do not support the sixth and eighth day creation theory. They do not support the theory even that there were bipeds in Genesis 1:25 and 26 that were good. Because Yahweh observed everything in Genesis chapter 1 that he created, and it was good. So if all the nations of the world make either sheep or goats and there's no third choice, well I would think that none of those goats are in that Genesis 1 creation.
Yeah.
Dan, you know, the children of Israel were told when there were aliens in their land that they had to abide by the laws of the land. When the stranger is in thy land, he shall observe the Sabbath, or he will die. They could stop doing their sin, but that don't mean that they're going to be made a sheep and go on the right side. They're goats.
Oh, absolutely, Bill. And there's so many verses that discuss Yahshua Christ came for Israel and Israel only. And there's little mention of the other races. I mean, it's almost as if they are completely insignificant. you know, and their moment of creation is quite obscure. And I think you do have to get into the Apocrypha books to, you know, try to lay a foundation in your study of where they perhaps came from. But even there, it's not crystal clear, you know. But certainly these fallen angels were very prolific sexually and apparently had amazing powers to impregnate anything they had sex with, be it animal, be it human. You know, they could impregnate just about anything, which is very interesting.
Well, right, and some people look at that it was DNA experiments and this or that, and there were definitely other advanced cultures here on Earth before us. And
yeah.
And either way, I don't care either way. It doesn't matter to me either way how they did it. But the angels that sinned confused the creation of Yahweh and created things that weren't supposed to be. And
right.
And Enoch says that evil spirits are the spirits of bastards.
Yes.
That's very clear in Enoch. The wicked spirits derived from the children of the giants and the children of bastards.
Correct, yes. So, I don't know, but you really see
and,
that.
And I want to address something in the forum. You know, just because they're called, just because other races are referred to as beasts later in the scripture, that doesn't mean that Yahweh created them. That doesn't mean that they're the beast of Genesis chapter 1. That doesn't mean that. You can't extrapolate that. You're making an extrapolation that doesn't exist. And some people are extrapolating that because they're called beasts later in Scripture. That means they were the beasts of Genesis 1. That's not necessarily so.
Yeah. I agree with that.
And the fallen angels created giants when they mixed with Adamic women. But they mixed their seed with every other sort of beast, too, as the Book of Enoch attests.
Yeah, it's interesting here how Enoch says, concerning these watchers that mated with human women, you have wrought great destruction on the earth, and you shall have no peace nor forgiveness of sin. And I think this really goes along with, you know, the concept of what is the unforgivable sin, and it's the product of race mixing, you know, and that's exactly what Enoch has said here, that Yahweh
right.
said.
You can never look to Yahweh to accept your bastard children.
Right. Never. And there is no forgiveness for that because you've created a race that Yahweh did not create, and you were commanded not to do that. And these watchers clearly left a clearly defined boundary and created another race. And their offspring were murdered, obviously not forgiven. And these watchers themselves, and it says and I thought this was a profound statement. It says, the murder of their beloved ones shall they see, and over the destruction of their children shall they lament, and shall make supplication unto eternity, but mercy and peace shall you not attain. I mean, if I'm reading it right, it says they are going to make supplication for themselves, for their sin, unto Yahweh for eternity, and will not receive forgiveness. I mean, what is the unforgivable sin? It is race mixing and having a child with someone of another race. You know, that's what these angels did. And they are going to supplicate unto eternity and not receive forgiveness. And that's a profound statement right there. You know, I mean, this thing of race mixing is a huge thing. I know we know it's a big deal, but sometimes I think to emphasize it and to really get into some of the different aspects of it is important. I mean, this is one of the most critical things I think there is that we can understand, how this is used as a weapon against our people, especially our young people. I can hardly go out anymore to places like malls. The race mixing makes me crazy the second I walk in, you know. And the classic one you see is a white girl with a black guy pushing a carriage with an orange-colored kid with orange kinky hair. I just want to go crazy when I see that.
There's nothing worse than a white girl with a niglet hanging from her hip. That's the most horrible sight in the world.
It is, because you know her life is ruined. She's ruined. She's defiled. I view someone like that, and I want to weep. I want to I want to reap judgment and vengeance upon those that caused that to happen, that promoted that. I believe
well, why don't
I'll
we read
chance.
The rest of Jeremiah 31? Because there's some hope in this. It ain't
Agreed.
Over.
We kind of got off, but it was a good getting off. Where did I leave off here? Let me shoot back.
Well, start at 31. That's where you left off. Verse 31. You read verse 30. I mean, now we're up to the hope part, right?
Yep. Behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. And no one else, by the way.
Absolutely no one else. The new covenant is a matter of prophecy, and it's only for Israelites, period, over and done with.
That's it. Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt.
Now that means that the house of Israel and the house of Judah aren't a church, but they're people descended from those fathers.
That's it. That's it. Very clear. Which my covenant they break, although I was a husband unto them, saith Yahweh. But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith Yahweh, I will put my law in their inward parts, and write it in their hearts, and will be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. And they shall teach no more every man his neighbor, and every man his brother, saying, Know Yahweh, for they shall all know me, from the least of them unto the greatest of them, saith Yahweh. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more.
Now, let me say something.
Okay, jump in.
Every white man on this planet has heard of Jesus Christ, even by that name.
Yeah.
Yahshua Messiah, Jesus Christ, Yahweh, the Lord. Everybody knows who the God of the Bible is. So why are we still evangelizing? Yeah, you know, the evangelists are still in the age of the fishers. And that age is over. Jeremiah 16:16. I will send many fishers, and they will fish them. Then I will send many hunters, and they will hunt them out of the holes of the rocks. And they're the archaeologists. They're absolutely the archaeologists. And the period of fishing is over. They all shall know me. There's no more know Yahweh. We all know him. We all know who the God of the Bible is. No matter what particular name for him, you I'm not even going to split hairs over that. We all know he's Yahweh, but even the people that know the terms God, the Lord, Jesus, they know who the God of the Bible is.
Right.
So there's no more point in evangelizing. Every white man on the planet for the last 500 years has heard who the God of the Bible is.
Yeah, we feel this tremendous burden to evangelize the other races, foolishly, of course.
Well, it's pointless doing that anyway, but even a lot of these people in mainstream churches think they have to evangelize white people. And my point is that every white man in the world has had the chance and knows who the God of the Bible is. They don't need evangelizing.
Yes, I agree. I it's just part of the Judeo-Christian confusion. You know, spending their resources on trying to convert Negroes and Mexicans and Chinese and every other race and translating the Bible into their language and, you know, thinking they're doing God's service. It just drives you crazy when you see it, you know. Apparently it just has to be that way in this age. Let me read on verse 34. No, wait, I read verse 34. All right, here we get into some really tremendous promises from Yahweh. And again, I think this goes to the fact that, you know, where does the church come in here? This is Yahweh's eternal promises to Israel and no one else. Thus saith Yahweh, which giveth the sun for a light by day, and the ordinances of the moon and of the stars for a light by night, which divideth the sea when the waves thereof roar. Yahweh of hosts is his name. If those ordinances depart from before me, saith Yahweh, then the seed of Israel also shall cease from being a nation before me forever. Thus saith Yahweh.
Now that word nation is goy, and it's usually translated Gentile everywhere else.
Right.
So the children of Israel will never cease being a Gentile.
Yeah. But I mean, such a tremendous promise. And you know, again, when I was in Bible college studying to be a minister, the very few times that Israel was even mentioned, of course, it was always some ancient history, the Israelites, you know, the old Jews, and there never was really a thought of teaching that as long as the moon and the stars and the sun are still there, Yahweh's promise is that, you know, they will not cease from being a nation forever, you know?
Well, right, and that means that they can't be a church.
Exactly.
The children of Israel cannot be a church. They have to be a nation. A church is not a nation, and vice versa. Now, in the correct sense, an ecclesia, the called out ones, can come out from a nation. And that's the correct biblical sense.
Yeah.
That even though the entire nation, the children of Israel are all of the same nation, not every one of them has accepted the redemption. And they're not all part of the ecclesia until they do. But
right.
But you can't take nation and substitute it for church. There's absolutely no scriptural grounding for doing so.
Right, Bill. And the concept of church in today's Christian world is really a replacement for Israel. Who needs Israel? We have the church. Jesus died for the church. You know, that's what's taught, and that's what they believe.
Well, the covenant is with a nation, obviously.
Right. So much falsehood out there that you know, I don't know. You can probably trace it all back to Jews and demented Catholics from hundreds of years ago that saw an opportunity to become powerful with these teachings. Let me go on with verse 37. Thus saith Yahweh, if heaven above can be measured, and the foundations of the earth searched out beneath, I will also cast off all the seed of Israel for all that they have done, saith Yahweh. I really love this verse, because heaven above cannot be measured. Even with all our science, all our Hubble telescopes, basically it's up there saying, man, this can't be measured. It goes on forever. The heaven, at least by man, cannot be measured, and the foundations of the earth searched out beneath. I've read that the earth, the mantle, the crust of the earth goes down thousands of miles, and I think the deepest that we have gone down is maybe a couple of hundred miles. I don't know that we've gone down any deeper than that. So obviously the foundations of the earth cannot and have not ever been searched out beneath. So therefore, according to Yahweh, He has not cast off all the seed of Israel. So
absolutely not. There's still seed. There's still a nation. There's still a race. There's still a family. And that they can't ever possibly be anything else.
That's it. And praise Yahweh for these tremendous promises, because these are concrete promises. You can look outside the door tonight, and you can look up and see the moon and the stars, and that is the foundation of Yahweh's promise that the seed of Israel shall not cease from being a nation before him forever. You know, I try to remind myself of that when I'm out at night and I look up and I see the moon and the stars and I think, thank you, Yahweh. You know, just like you put the rainbow in the sky to remind yourself not to bring a flood upon the earth again. You know, it's almost like the sun, the moon, and the stars are there to remind you that we are not going to cease from being a nation before you. But that's for our benefit to see that promise.
Right. And as long as there's a sun and a moon and the stars, the mainstream Judeo-Christianity is not legitimate.
Absolutely. Well said there.
Because Israel is still a nation.
That's it. They're still a nation. And the seed is still there. Yahweh has not cast off the seed of Israel. And I like the way it says, for all that they have done. Because in reality, we probably deserve to be cast off.
Well, absolutely. I mean,
I say probably, absolutely. We have not been faithful. And
we
deserve
to this day to be cast off.
We do. Praise
Every
Yahweh.
Every time a Christian embraces a Jew, he's wrapping his lips around Satan.
Yeah. So it's good that Yahweh gives us these tremendous promises, because, you know, it would be easy for us to be cast off if we just looked at our behavior and what we really deserved. We'd be cast off, but Last time I checked, the sun, the moon, and the stars were out there, and heaven cannot be measured, and the foundations of the earth cannot be searched out. So, Yahweh has not cast us off. Verse 38, Behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that the city shall be built to Yahweh, from the tower of Hananel unto the gate of the corner, and the measuring line shall yet go forth over against it upon the hill Gareb, and shall compass about to Goath, and the whole valley of dead bodies and of the ashes, and all the fields under the brook of Kidron, under the corner of the horse gate toward the east, shall be holy unto Yahweh. It shall not be plucked up nor thrown down any more forever.
And that's it. He's basically just telling us that we are going to have a permanent home.
Yeah.
And that's in line with 2 Samuel 7:10,
mm-hmm.
that the children of Israel will be moved from Palestine to another place where they will not move again. And that's precisely what that's saying. Palestine is not the place.
Right. I mean, is it pretty safe to say that we're in the place now where it is?
Well, there's no place left to go on this planet.
Yeah.
I mean, if this isn't the place, then there is no resurrection. This has to be the place.
I would think so as well. I believe that it is, you know, and we seem to have been our ancestors fulfilled the prophecies of going to the west and to the north and the Scandinavian countries, and then our ancient brethren, you know, going to the Scottish and English isles and then over to here.
Well, there's a prophecy concerning the dispersion of Israel, and I really love this prophecy, and I don't get to say it enough, so I'm going to use this opportunity to quote Micah 4:7, and I will make her that halted a remnant. He's talking about the dispersion of Israel.
Yeah.
And her that was cast far off, a strong nation. And when you look at the history of the dispersed Israelites, how the Sake traveled across Europe, and some of them stayed behind. I mean, some of them were still in Armenia and the Parthians of Iran in the time of Christ.
Right.
Okay, but they became a remnant. They got overran by the other races. They're done for. But as the further away our people traveled, the stronger we became.
Yep. Yeah, the further away we got from the Jew.
Well, right. The further away we got from the point of our dispersion. I will make her that halted, meaning her that stayed behind, a remnant. And her that was driven far off, a strong nation. And that can't ever be said of the Jews. But it can only be said of the white Germanic people that descended from dispersed Israel.
Yeah. Our people are under such attack today in this country and around the world. Yet it seems, you know, that we've seen tonight in chapter 31 of Jeremiah that this is Yahweh's providential dealing with us. I'd say it's partly his judgment, and yet he said through this he would build and plant.
Let's look at the story of Job, and we can compare this Jeremiah 28 and 29 to the story of Job.
Okay.
Because Satan wanted to test Job. Yahweh didn't want to test Job. Satan was accusing Job. Look at your servant, how he has it made. And if he didn't have it made, he would curse you. And
okay.
Yahweh said, well, okay, you go ahead and do whatever you want to him, but don't kill him. And Job was rendered righteous because he lost everything. He was tried by Satan and he lost everything, but he never blamed Yahweh.
Yeah, that's a good illustration because, you know, Satan did the testing, but certainly Yahweh allowed it and set the parameters of how far it could go. And it's safe to say that I think what you're trying to say is that's the situation we're in now. You know, Satan is really active in attacking us via these other races, yet really Yahweh is the one that's allowing it to take place. And, you know, out of that, he's building and planting us. So
absolutely. There's no doubt, and we have to know that Yahweh is in control.
Exactly.
And those of us who are faithful are going to be restored just like Job.
Surely it's a time with our understanding now to guard our racial purity like no other time than that of our family, and especially our children. You know, those of us that are adults, we see these truths. You know, I mean, we're not going to go out and date some other race or marry some other race. I mean, we'd have to backslide beyond comprehension for something like that to happen, those of us that have reached adulthood and understand these things. But I fear for our children. They are the ones under the constant barrage of this Jewish mind attack that is 24/7 on any media you want to look at, magazines, TV. It never ends. It's incredible. I get so angry when I see it, you know. It just never stops. And some of it is so clear to see. Other times it's so amazingly subtle. You know, I see it a lot because I understand. I get it. But young people, they're not going to see through the subtlety of the Jew. And they are subtle bastards, that's for sure. You know, they are subtle. Evil. Satanic. I mean, we need Yahweh's mercy. I wanted to read a couple verses here, Bill, from Psalm 144, verse 7 and 8, that I have in my list of verses on race mixing. It says, "Send thine hand from above, rid me and deliver me out of great waters from the hand of strange children, whose mouth speaketh vanity, and their right hand is a right hand of falsehood." And I don't know if it was David that wrote the psalm. I believe that it was. But he's praying here to be delivered from the hands of strange children, whose mouth speaks vanity, and their right hand is a right hand of falsehood. And that is exactly a description of the Jews that are in power over us today. You know, strange children constantly speaking vanity, their right hand is a hand of falsehood. These are the people that lead our country right now. They call the shots for us in many ways. We don't bow down to them, but they greatly affect pretty much everything we do. And I just believe in these last days, Yahweh's calling us to really pray, spend more time in prayer. And I think specifically prayers of judgment for our enemy.
Well, right, absolutely. And you know, people, you know, this is a result of our own sin. And a lot of people don't see that. And they look at middle America, and when I say middle America, I mean the farmers in Iowa,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Kansas, the factory workers in Pennsylvania. The average white man is not a sinner. But when he sits in his church and listens to his preacher tell him that the other races are God's people, that homosexuals are accepted by God, that fags should be able to get married, that this, that, and he accepts all this sin. Well, then he's responsible for it.
Yeah.
And they're not speaking out against the sin. So they're going to keep being punished.
No doubt about it. And we're going to keep those that are in power over us in power. Because, you know, until there's true repentance in Yahweh's people, you know, why should Yahweh turn the situation
right.
around? Our
and,
judgment
and aside
must continue.
From that is, aside from that, there's the support for Hollywood that they fork over every week when they rent the stupid movies and all the other things, the purchase of lottery tickets and the purchase of sporting events tickets and all the other things they partake in. And that's, you know, it's a whole bunch of little sins, but it has enriched our enemies.
No, it's great feeding of the beast nonstop, you know. The beast just takes our money left and right.
Well, I'm going to acknowledge Gerald's on the line and Bruce is on the line. I mean, I know Eli usually limits this program to an hour and a half, but, you know, I'm probably a little more apt to stay on later. And
yeah.
I'm not going to end the program right now if these guys want to say anything. Or Gerald, Bruce, hello?
Hello. I just wanted to say this is a great program tonight. Y'all have done an excellent job. There's nothing I can say at the moment that would add to it, but just y'all keep the program going. It's great.
Thank you, Gerald. Bruce, how you doing?
Good. Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. Well,
praise what Yahweh.
Are you well, where are you now, Bruce? I like to hear where you're at all the time.
Well, I'm in Orlando. I'm in Orlando.
Oh, you're home?
No, well, yeah, well.
Close
no.
enough, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's yeah, kind of a hard thing about coming out of the horror, isn't it?
Excuse me, Bruce?
I say that's kind of hard to understand for a lot of us is that horror and the revelations of the great horror of Babylon is us. And we need to stop being horrors for the Jews.
Right, as long as we're participating in the system and enriching our enemies, we're the whore.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all symbolic. It's,
yes.
We understood, right? Yeah.
You know, I have a comment on something y'all said earlier when you were talking about the destruction of the cities throughout this country. And I guess late 1960s, I went to Atlanta, Georgia, to visit some friends, and they took me downtown, and this was now in the late 60s, and on these streets, these major streets in Atlanta, were these big, fine Victorian homes, and they were just lined up block after block after block, and they were empty. And the blacks had just moved in all around those areas. And the white people had fled, and I'm sure lots of them lost their investments in those properties. But the houses, the blacks hadn't moved into them yet, but they were starting to move into them. And I was thinking way back then, what a travesty of justice for us to allow a beast people to come in and destroy our beautiful cities. And of course, now it's happening all over the United States.
Well, I saw that happen in neighborhood after neighborhood in Jersey City in the 60s and 70s.
Well,
and I saw it happen in Newark.
What surprises me the most is that the average white Jacob Israel person cannot see this. We look at our cities. We know what's happening to Detroit and Cleveland and the cities you've mentioned and all. But yet it doesn't seem to register.
These
damn politicians ignore what is happening to this country. They brag about the control that the urban areas have in these national elections. And, of course, when Obama was elected, they ranted and raved about how, well, just wait till these big black areas come in, and that's going to swing the state vote. And sure enough, it did. But where are sane people today?
Gerald, I know it amazes me that politicians can, and when I say politicians, I mean Jews. Jews are behind these policies, no doubt about it. You know, they'll move thousands of African natives or Somalia natives to, you know, beautiful, pristine areas of like Minnesota, North Dakota, Montana, Idaho. What possible benefit could there be from that? How can the people in those states not just wake up and just demand that? Why would you possibly bring these people here? You know, they don't even know how to use a toilet. There is not a standard. You're going to have to support them 100%. They don't have any money. Why would you settle them by the thousands in the middle of white communities? It can only have one possible reason to harm us, to harm our race. In our cities, our neighborhoods. There is no other possible reason for doing it. It makes no sense from any angle at all. And I don't buy that it's a humanitarian thing to do. That's nonsense.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the toilet thing because I witnessed hundreds of times, if not thousands, Haitians especially, and Jamaicans and certain Mexicans stand on a toilet seat and squat.
Yeah.
They don't sit on a toilet. They stand on it and squat.
No, they're savages. What possible benefit could there be to our race to settle thousands of savages in our midst?
It's no benefit at all unless you want your grandchildren get, you know, that look like rhesus monkeys and your daughters to be destroyed and your sons to be stabbed.
It could only be for our detriment. No other reason. Because there is no benefit.
Greg, during that period in the late 60s on, we watched the government bring in these housing projects in Shreveport, and
yeah.
they would place them right in the middle of affluent white neighborhoods deliberately to wreck those neighborhoods, to wreck the schools and everything else. It was a
yeah.
deliberate thing. And no one else in the country was experiencing that except here in the South. And that's part of this browbeating that we Southerners have gone through during that period.
Yeah, that was no doubt to punish you guys first. Of course, then it spread around the country, but it figures they would do it to the Southerners first, you know.
But that's because we were evil people, and the rest of the country just turned away. They didn't look. They didn't see. They really didn't care what was happening to us down here.
Right, as long as it wasn't in their neighborhood. But
yeah.
now every white area in the United States and probably around the world has been polluted with this same type of a strategy.
Well, I don't know how it is now, but in 1989, and after really never leaving the East Coast, I never left New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts. I did a few times, but I'm pretty much I don't like the beaches, and Florida doesn't do anything for me, and Hawaii and all the, I never wanted to do anything when I was a kid but go up the mountains and camp and bass fish. So I never had to stray too far from home, right? Well, in 89, I took a ride. And I took a ride up to, I've been to Boston plenty of times, but I took a ride up to Halifax, Nova Scotia. Well, we went to Bar Harbor, which is pretty nice, and we took the ferry to Yarmouth and drove up the Atlantic coast to Halifax. And when I got to Halifax, I was absolutely amazed at how clean a decent-sized city could be. I mean, Halifax is a couple hundred thousand people probably, I'm guessing, but it was spotless. I couldn't believe it. I had never been in a place so big where it was so clean. And of course, it's like the population at that time was 100% white. Yeah, or at least 99% white in Halifax. And from there, we went to Quebec City. And even Quebec City, which is a much bigger city, was so clean compared to the cities in New York and New Jersey. I couldn't believe it. And I didn't want to leave. I'm being honest with you. Even Montreal, comparatively, was a much cleaner city at that time than New York. And forget Jersey City and Newark. I mean, that's just a cesspool. But that really struck me, that where you have cities of white people, that those cities are clean and well-kept, and there's no garbage all over the streets and busted-down shacks all over the place, It just doesn't exist in white cities. But look at Detroit today, and look at Cleveland and Philly. They're destroyed. And it wasn't white people that dwelt there and destroyed those cities.
You know, you go into even a poor white neighborhood, and it still is not bad. Even if it's run down a little bit, you can walk down that street without fearing for your life. But,
and they don't throw trash along the streets and up against the fences and out their back doors and their front lawns.
Right. I don't remember
seeing that. At least they had pride.
Let me tell you how I felt about Montreal and Quebec City. I was a smoker when I was young. I wouldn't throw my cigarette butt in the street. It was so clean. I would be the only one that would litter. I couldn't do it. I would pinch it out and put it in my pocket. And
yeah.
I had to reserve a pocket just for my cigarette butts.
That's why that's one reason I hate the term white trash. I think that's a Jew term. I hate that term because even the lower of our race to me are higher than the highest Negroes, and I don't buy into that white trash concept at all.
Maury Povich and Jerry Springer exist to find wherever they can white people who will fit that definition for
yeah.
a couple of $100 on television.
Yeah, whites that will come in and act like Negroes, you know. And, there's no doubt some of our race are lower than others, but, I mean, to me, no white person is trash. Even the lowest among us, if they're an Israelite, to me, they're a precious soul on this earth. And, but you know, we're hammered from every possible angle by the Jew, you know, and anything they can do to tear our race down will be done, whether it's race mixing, whether it's mocking us on shows like Jerry Springer. I mean, you could list 50 things without hardly thinking of ways that they tear our race down. Look how stupid they make us look in all the various commercials for various business things. And some, you know, well-dressed black will be sitting there, you know, helping and teaching the poor, hapless white man in the office. It drives me insane to see that. I see that all the time. You know, I worked for a large company for 19 years. I saw many Negroes that worked in those companies. It never was where the Negro was the smart one and the white was the hapless one. It was always the other way around. We hired so many Negroes, you know, because we were forced to hire certain percentages of them. I worked for a big pharmaceutical company for many years, and I saw so many Negroes that just clearly were hired because of the color of their skin. Most of them were gone after 6 months because what we did was very technical, and you had to be eloquent. You had to have scientific knowledge of medicine. And, you know, they lasted about a month or two, then they were out of there. And the majority of them ended up suing the company, saying they were fired because they were black. And the company quickly learned it was easier to settle with them than to fight them in court. Because you could fight them in court and win and spend $200,000 in legal fees, or you could just cut them a check for $40,000 and say, all right, sign here saying you'll never sue us again, and we didn't.
Well, right. And that's how Jesse Jackson has made all his money.
Right.
By extorting companies in that very manner.
Yeah. Pay me $100,000 and I'll go away, or fight me in court and spend $1 million. Your choice.
That's what it boils down to.
And, of course, our Jewish-run legal system feeds right into the whole concept.
Yeah, well, they get paid no matter what. They get paid whether they go to court or not. I mean, they're going to get their money just out of the settlement.
Right. Yeah. No, our system is run by Jews, top to bottom. The legal system, the education system, the media system, every system there is, the education system. I mean, we have Jews in charge of just about everything today that's worth being in charge of.
And that's why everything is upside down. That's why all justice is upside down. That's what we were told would happen. Good would be woe to them who call evil good and good evil. And that's who Isaiah is talking about.
So we have to be in this current situation, apparently. I don't like it. But, you know, tonight's kind of fellowship helped me realize even more. And as I was studying for it, I also saw it, that Yahweh is working in this racial chaos to build us and to plant us. And this is exactly where we need to be. And, you know, if we don't like it, that really doesn't matter. Yahweh's working in this mess. We're being planted and built.
No doubt. There's no doubt. There's good is going to come out of this. And Yahweh's remnant will survive.
Exactly.
And we will always be a nation.
He's calling his remnant out of this chaos right now.
No matter how bad things look, we will not be eliminated. We will always be here.
That's right. I look outside. I see the moon. It's still there.
We will prevail. There is no doubt.
Yeah, there is no doubt.
It might get awfully bad, but we will prevail. There is hope in this.
I agree, Bill.
Satan's plans will fail.
It's encouraging, these verses we got into tonight, that, you know, no matter how bad it gets, Yahweh's promises, we can rest in them, that we will not cease from being a nation before him, and that our seed will continue. I mean, we certainly are going to be the victors in this whole mess, and I agree with you. I think we're going to go through some very hard times. Probably in our generation, our lifetime, I would think. That's my opinion. I mean, it seems set up for it to happen soon. And we'll see. But, you know, I'm very peaceful about the situation and Yahweh working in this mess. You know, we just have to go through what we're going through. That's it.
It'll work out for good in the end.
Yes.
There's no doubt. Paul says all things work out for good to those who love Yahweh.
So.
And even a lot of our people, our misguided people in those mainstream churches, they do love God. They're just misguided. And,
yeah.
and they haven't been called to awakening yet. And they will be.
I agree.
When he wants them to be.
So
I mean, we all got here, right? And we think we're in the right place.
Yep. I'm convinced of it. You know, I mean, I see tonight we had, I don't know, 25, 30, 35 people in our chat room. And, I mean, that's just a good gathering of the remnant to me. You know, we're never going to look in that chat room. I don't know, maybe we will someday when it gets really, really bad in the world. It might, but I mean, if we had 1,000 people in that chat room, it would almost worry me, you know, but if it was sincere, it'd be awesome. But this is a hidden message right now, and Yahweh is calling out like one at a time. It's not a national awakening at this point, but Yahweh's calling. I hope Yahweh's calling us as his overcomers. That's my prayer. You know, we're the early awakened ones, and that's a precious thing. Because 99.9% of our people do not see this, yet we see it. That's a great thing. This is priceless, what we know, what we see. You wouldn't sell this. You wouldn't not have this for $1 billion. I wouldn't even think about it. For all the money in the world, I wouldn't give up what I know now.
Well, there's nothing else that explains the Bible in the context of history.
Absolutely.
There is nothing else.
This is the center of the universe to be of the seed of Israel. This is the most important thing for a white person in the entire universe right now to have the understanding of who you are and what your history is, what your genetic lineage is, and why that is important, and that Yahshua Christ died and rose again specifically for your race, for your seed. What is there beyond that? That's everything. That's everything there is in this world. Everything else is secondary to that.
Yes, it is. And understanding why he died and that it was for his relationship with the children of Israel. That's the only reason why he died.
That is the center of the universe right now, is what we are discussing. You know, we're not just some little Christian group having our little Bible study. We have plugged into the central truth of the universe, that the entire universe is focused on Yahweh having his remnant on this planet, that he came down here and died to redeem a specific family of people and no one else, and now is calling in this generation his elect from that group of people. There is nothing else in the world. I mean, this is it. This is the center of the universe here, these truths.
Absolutely. And let me say a couple of things for I'm going to spam for Clifton that because it's related to topics we covered tonight. His teaching letter series right now, he's about to publish Watchman's teaching letters 143 and 144. And they're covering the marriage relationship between Yahweh and Israel in great detail. And he's been doing that for about 5 or 6 teaching letters now. And a lot of people might, be turned off by the amount of detail, but it's necessary to know thoroughly because the marriage relationship between Yahweh and the nation, the race of Israel, is the central concept of the Bible. The whole Bible is built around that relationship.
And it's beautiful that those truths stand up to the detail. I mean, Christianity is so shallow that it would turn them off to read it. You know, they can barely read anything. They have to be spoon-fed by their pastor. You know,
this is
what we believe. Here's a verse that backs it up. All right,
right.
That's the plate. You know, that's about all there is.
So I definitely I recommend them. And concerning this little debate we had before over the beast of the field as an aside to this program,
mm-hmm.
Clifton is also doing an in-depth study on the beast of the field. And I'm proofreading it now. I proofread the first part of it for him today, and I'm hopefully going to proofread the second part in the morning and part 3 one day next week. And the first 2 parts will be out by April 1st. And he goes into great detail concerning how this word, this phrase, beast of the field, is used, and what the Hebrew words are behind it. Che and behemoth, or behemoth, and it's if you really want to understand the beast of the field and the beasts of Genesis 1 and 2 and 3 and 9 and so forth, you should read this series of essays by Clifton, because it really just goes into detail from the lexicons and the biblical passages concerning the beast of the field.
Well, I can't wait to read them, you know, because it. I mean, there is some good argument that these other races that we're surrounded by did originate from a fallen angel mating with various creatures. I mean, it's a very viable explanation, because the other explanation is also shaky, you know? So, but either way, they're not of the house of Judah or the house of Israel, no matter what anybody says about these other races.
No, right. Even other white Adamites aren't of the house of Judah or the house of Israel. I mean, people don't realize that the children of Israel are not the white race as opposed to the non-white races. The children of Israel are one small portion of a much greater white race, which at one time existed. And today is basically only remnants in diverse places of it are found. And you know, the Egyptians originally were white. The Ethiopians, I can prove from language and history that they were originally white.
Yeah.
The Assyrians who occupied the land of modern day Iraq, they were absolutely white. The Persians were the whitest of the white. The Greeks said that the Greeks marveled. Xenophon, who wrote in the early to middle 4th century BC, marveled at how white the Persians were.
Right.
Okay. The Medes were Herodotus says that the Medes were the first people ever called Aryans, that they occupied the land in what we know today as northern Iraq.
Yeah.
And all these people were white, and they're all gone. That they all have basically no national identity left. Some of them are found in the Slavic races of Europe. Some of them. But for the most part, they're gone. And the northern Europeans are basically descended from the children of Israel. And that's a remnant of the former white race. Most of the others disappeared, fell by the wayside because of race mixing.
Yeah.
And paganism, which leads to race mixing. And Jews love pagans, by the way.
You know, it's no small matter to be alive in this current generation and to hear the voice of Yahweh. I mean, with all the race mixing that's gone on over the generations, and yet here we are today, we are the ones calling on Yahweh. We see the truth of the truth of Israel. And I mean, it's genetics is a fascinating thing to me now, you know, how important it is. And I tell people all the time, I tell them, you know, if you're a white person in this current generation, you have thousands of years worth of your ancestors to be thankful for, that they guarded their racial purity. That if you're racially pure today as a white man or a white woman, you know, it should never enter your mind to mix with another race and drag your bloodline screaming to a halt that thousands of people before you, or thousands of years of your ancestors kept pure. And how dare you even consider to bring it down? I've mentioned this before, not necessarily to people in identity, but to other, you know, people that were white that, you know, didn't see what we see, but I tried to instill in them some type of racial purity concept thinking. You know, people just seem like cast it away, like it's no big deal anymore. Like, oh, you know, I hear people all the time, oh, I'd love to marry some little Asian girl so she could cook for me. That pushes my button when people say that kind of stuff. I always call people on it. You know, I don't pull the whole Bible out and beat them with it over the head, but it crosses my mind to do that. But I tell them directly, don't bring your bloodline to a halt. It's 1,000 times more important than you may realize right now. but have some consciousness of your race.
That was the problem that a lot of the pagans that debated with me in prison had with Christianity. They couldn't understand the moral issues. And they all wanted their slim little Asian girl for a sex toy.
Right.
And that's absolutely repulsive.
Repulsive.
And they were skinheads and Odinists and types like that who claimed to be racially aware, but they weren't.
Yeah.
They absolutely weren't. Any racially aware man would never, ever enter into anything that wasn't of his own flesh and blood and bone. That's why Adam said, Eve is now. My wife is flesh of my flesh and bone of my bone.
Exactly.
One of the first lessons our race learned, Genesis chapter 2, that your wife should be flesh of your flesh and bone of your bone. And it's
sounds
not
the same race
problem.
To me. You know, sounds like the same race to me.
Absolutely.
You know, and again, we get back into the whole thought of how other races are used as a weapon against our race to destroy us. You know, just to destroy us. No other reason. Straight back to Genesis 3:15. Just one avenue of the enmity. I mean, there's many avenues, but that might be the greatest one. Using another race to destroy us. Just like what exactly happened in the garden. One race, you know, the interjection of fallen angel sperm into the womb of Eve. I mean, that was the prototype of race mixing right there. And it's continued directly since. So, we need Yahweh's mercy.
The thing that amuses me a little bit is the Jews are so paranoid. But who wouldn't be paranoid if you were aware of what your people have done throughout civilization to our race of people, the horrible, horrible things the Bolsheviks did and are doing all today? I would be paranoid too. I'd be afraid to walk down the street without looking behind my shoulder.
Well, Gerald, that's an excellent point. If I'm in your house in the middle of the night and I don't belong there, I'm going to be paranoid and looking over my shoulder, aren't I? If I'm the thief stealing and looting and pillaging your home, I am going to be paranoid looking over my shoulder. And the Jews prove their sin all the time. Because of their own paranoia. Because a righteous man is never paranoid and doesn't bother looking back. He who lays his hand to the plow and looks to the things behind has no part with Yahshua Christ. A righteous man doesn't bother looking back to see if anybody's watching him, to see if he might get in trouble for what he's doing. And the Jews prove their guilt all the time. Satan proves his guilt all the time. And that's an excellent point. Okay, somebody say something. I mean, I can't keep talking. I probably could, but it wouldn't be. I don't want to be an air hog.
That's all right. I'm starting to wind down. I had a real early morning today and been going full blast all day. Spent a few hours kind of getting ready for this program, just some labor and just reading. Just burdened about this concept of race mixing.
There is hope.
I hate it.
And we're supposed to hate it. And the children of God would hate it.
You know, I love the story of Phineas and his reaction to the race mixing and fornication that was going on when Israel was under judgment by Yahweh. You know, and he was granted the eternal priesthood for his act. Sometimes I have to subdue that same impulse.
Well, and it, absolutely, but we have to restrain ourselves because you don't help your brethren sitting in prison. I know that from experience.
Yeah.
You cannot be a help to your brother sitting in prison. It's not a very productive thing to be doing.
Well, I think those of us, Bill, that see these truths just yearn in our spirit for Yahweh to return and to deal with this situation and just to bring this sinful race-mixed age to a close, bring his judgment upon the seed of Cain. serpent's seed, take these tares out of here and establish his kingdom on this earth. I know we all long for that.
Well, absolutely. It'll be done.
It'll be done.
We can only, that's the Christian hope, right? I mean, if Christianity is not the true religion, then the laws of energy conservation in the universe are definitely violated, because all this is for naught. And that can't be. That can't possibly be.
It cannot possibly be.
We have the sure word of prophecy. There's no doubt. We have the sure word of prophecy. We just don't know the time. And we're told we wouldn't.
So if anybody's going to bring Yahweh back via praying, I believe it will be his remnant and no one else. Because our prayer will be an accurate prayer for judgment upon a specific group of individuals that we and few others have identified. I mean, who else? I mean, you go into the average church and say, I want to go in your average church sometime and say, listen, I want to ask two questions. Who in the church can tell me the name of God, and who in here can tell me who is the enemy of God? And I just want to see blank, stupid looks on all their faces. And then, of course, I'd have to preach a message to them. You know?
Well, you know, I've tried explaining life to some mainstream Baptist kin of my own, and that they just think I'm nuts. What can I say? They just think I'm crazy.
Yeah. I go through the same thing.
I'm going to wind this down. It's 10 o'clock, and I know you're tired and people are getting tired. And thank you for being here tonight, Greg.
Oh, I enjoyed it greatly. Thanks for having
pleasure.
Me. Appreciated Eli and you giving me a chance to come on. Thank you.
And this is William Fink for Eli James and Yahweh's Covenant People. Eli will be back at noon tomorrow on The Voice of Christian Israel. And I will be on with Sword Brethren tomorrow night. And I think we're going to discuss Dr. Joseph Goebbels' speech, Communism with the Mask Off. Thank you and good night.